This is the Reformed Media Review, episode number 6. In this episode, we discuss several new and forthcoming titles, including John Calvin, A Pilgrim's Life by John Selderhouse, and Why Johnny Can't Preach by T. David Gordon. All this and more ahead on the Reformed Media Review. Welcome to the Reformed Media Review, where Reformed refers to the reviewers and not the things being reviewed. This is our weekly look at all things Reformed theology, books and movies and culture, all that fun stuff. My name is Camden Busey, and I have with me Jeff Waddington, who's teacher of the congregation at Calvary OPC in Ringgoes, New Jersey. How are you doing, Jeff?
I'm doing fine. How are you, Camden?
I'm getting along just fine. We're excited. And we've got quite a bit to talk about. We've had a little bit of a lag in terms of new books, but apparently we have several new ones. What's available
now?
Yeah,
it does appear as though we've caught up with ourselves. We're now, a month after Christmas, and so I guess the publishers feel that it's safe to now introduce new books. Most all of our listeners probably know that it's the 500th anniversary of John Calvin's birth, and so we would expect that Christian publishers especially will be issuing or publishing new books, and one of them is coming from InterVarsity Press. It's called John Calvin, A Pilgrim's Life, and it's by Herman J. Selderhouse, and it looks to be a very good book. Again, all of these titles we're going to mention today, nearly all of them, are books that are either just out, which means we don't have them and haven't read them, but we're just letting our listeners know that they're coming or are already available. So this episode is not really a review in terms of critical interaction, just so you know.
Just news.
Making you aware what sometimes are called in print brief notices. So that you know that we know that these books are out there. And Lord willing, in the days ahead, we may be able to actually give reviews of them. So that's Herman J. Selderhouse, John Calvin, A Pilgrim's Life. So that's going to be a biography of Calvin's work.
Maybe we could say we offer mildly informed speculation about books.
There you go, mildly informed speculation. I like that. Okay. Now what we're going to do is go by publisher and try to mention books that at least they're interesting to me, if nobody else, okay?
All right.
So we're looking at InterVarsity. Lots of interesting books coming out, and we don't necessarily agree with all of these. So even though we mention them, please don't assume that we agree with them in as much as in terms of what we think will be, because these are forthcoming books.
Right. Our goal here is to inform people about what's out there in this tradition and for the purpose of scholarly interaction and sharpening us.
I just wanted to let people know that, and the truth, you need to be reading material whether you agree with it or not.
Sure.
Because, how do you know if you agree with something before you've read it? Anyways, there's the Old Testament Theology by Robin Routledge, again, IVP, a book called Introducing Paul by Michael Bird. Michael Bird is a relatively familiar name, I think, to those who have read on the New Perspective on Paul. He's an interesting go-between, not fully New Perspective, but not fully against it either. But anyways, that'll be an interesting book to be on the lookout for. Let's see. The Limits of Liberal Democracy by Scott Moore, coming out in April. Looks like an interesting title if you're interested in political theory, which I am. Interesting title. Let's see, Abusing Scripture by Manfred Brauch. There's a commentary on 2 Peter and Jude by Robert Harvey and Philip Towner in the InterVarsity, the IVP New Testament Commentary Series. And the last of the InterVarsity titles that I want to mention is Trinitarian Theology for the Church.
Nice.
By Daniel Trier and David Lauber. Now let's move over to Erdmann's. They have a new catalog out, Erdmann's does. and they've got some very interesting titles. Friends of Calvin by Michael Vandenberg. There's an English translation of the 1541 French edition of Calvin's Institutes.
What year?
1541.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so this is going to be – remember there were five Latin editions?
I have a 1536.
Yeah, well, 1539. Is it 1539?
Maybe, yeah.
That's the first edition.
Okay.
And the 1559 is the last edition. But I believe there were five Latin editions. But there were several French editions that John Calvin himself wrote.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not necessarily – they're not exactly the same. So we will now have accessible form to the general public a different edition of Calvin's Institutes, an English translation of the 1541 French edition.
Has anyone put together a – maybe not a harmony, but maybe a side-by-side or some – a diff? I mean
– you know, I've not seen it, but that probably would be if there are various scholars who have compared in their own research.
Sure.
Have compared Mark Garcia in his book on Life in Christ compares the unfolding development of the various editions of the Institute.
Well, you can get it in a digested form, but it'd be kind of nice to have kind of like something that you have when you track changes in Word or for computer programmers out there a diff file which tells you everything that's changed.
Right. No, that would be great. I don't know that anybody's done that.
It would take you quite a while.
Yeah,
but it'd be very helpful because you could watch, read for yourself and track the changes of what Calvin had modified over time in a visual way.
Right. No, that's always a very helpful. It's a very quick way to see differences, right, and changes.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's a book called John Calvin's Impact on Society by Martin Ernst Hirzel and Martin Salmon, editors. Paul Barnett has a book called Finding the Historical Christ. Dale Allison has a book called The Historical Christ and the Theological Jesus. There is a translation, I think this is for the first time, of Abraham Kuyper's Our Worship, which it would be worth reading. There's the Epistle to the Hebrews and Christian Theology. There is a new commentary by David Peterson of the Acts of the Apostles, which is substantial. I think we said it's 848 pages.
Oh, wow.
That's in the Pillar Commentary Series.
Mm-hmm.
Folks may remember that the Pillar Commentary Series actually began not as a series. They were individual commentaries, and over time they had the same kind of cover design. And they came to be known as the Pillar Commentary Series. David Peterson, I believe, is the former principal of Oak Hill College in London and is a personal friend of Carl Truman. I believe that's correct, if it's the same David Peterson. And he's an excellent author, definitely something worth looking at. I'm trying to see here any other titles that would be of interest from our friends at Erdmann's. I think that does it for Erdmann. There's one title for Presbyterian and Reformed, PNR. Our friend T. David Gordon has a book called Why Johnny Can't Preach. The Media Have Shaped the Messengers. T. David Gordon is a professor of religion and Greek at Grove City College,
yes,
where he's been since 1999. And before that, he was associate professor of New Testament at Gordon-Conwell in South Hamilton, Massachusetts. And at the same time, he served as the pastor at Christ Presbyterian Church in Nashua, New Hampshire. In fact, if I remember correctly, back in my old life as a Wesleyan pastor, he and I actually were in Nashua. I was leaving and he was coming about the same time to Nashua, New Hampshire. He is an excellent teacher. He's an expert on the Apostle Paul and a very thoughtful scholar. And I might add an excellent moderator in Presbytery.
Mm-hmm.
He was the moderator of what was then the Northeast Presbytery in the PCA in 1997 when I was brought under care. And he has a sense of humor, and he's able to keep, you know, those meetings from getting bogged down, which if you've been to a Presbytery meeting, you know, is potentially can happen.
Potentially?
Okay, I was trying to be nice.
I'm just kidding.
But he was able to I appreciate the fact that he was able at those critical moments to make some humorous comment that would break the stalemate or would cut the air and move things along. So that this sounds like an interesting book.
We've got a little clip here. It says an analysis of shifts in dominant media forms and their effects on the sensibilities of the culture as a whole.
Yes.
This is interesting. I'd love to get to talk to T. David Gordon about this. Maybe we could get Greg Reynolds on and have a little interaction on media ecology.
They may actually know each other.
Obviously, I wouldn't doubt it.
Nashua is the next city down from Manchester where Greg Reynolds is pastor. And so they may very well be friends. Okay, moving along. There is the book The Supremacy of God and the Theology of Samuel Rutherford by Guy Richard, which is a book that's not yet available, unfortunately. But it's to keep your eyes open for it. It's in the Studies in Christian History and Thought series that Paternoster publishes. Guy Richard's book has already been plugged by Ligon Duncan over at Reformation 21. Anything Lig Duncan gives this high marks, so I think you'd want to see or read it when it comes out.
Mm.
All right.
Already mentioned several times The Law Is Not of Faith. We have some copies of that now. Have you been able to read any articles in there yet?
I've scanned it. It has a very captivating introduction, and you've probably already seen this yourself, Camden. It's the introduction in italics, and anybody who is either licensed or ordained or is seeking that within our circles will readily relate to the young man being grilled for ordination in that opening sequence. And The Law Is Not of Faith is a defense by faculty of Westminster West and associates from who are not necessarily on the faculty, but who are of like mind. It's a defense of the idea that the Mosaic Covenant, while it is a covenant within the overall covenant of grace, it has what we would call a national typological aspect to it. So it is a republication of the covenant of works in terms of the way the nation of Israel could stay in the promised land. They could stay in the promised land by perfect obedience to God's law. This is typological in that it points to Christ, who would be the only perfect law keeper.
Right.
What's interesting, and I don't know if this will come out in the articles again because I've only scanned them, but you know that, did you know, Camden, and we've talked about this actually when we've talked about Jonathan Edwards, but that the Puritans, when they came to this country, had a notion of a national covenant.
Uh-huh, absolutely. They had this whole Puritan canopy thing.
Right. And they understood that was not about salvation. Very interestingly enough, that they understood that was separate from the issue of personal or individual eschatological salvation. And you know, whether they were right or wrong is another issue, right? That we could spend time delving into. But the fact is, it's interesting that the Puritans picked up on that, and they thought of it very much in terms that are being argued for in this book, I think. So we'll have more to say as we get an opportunity to actually read through the book.
Certainly.
Let's see here. New items are forthcoming. Items, The Theology of John Calvin by Charles Partey, as opposed to Part B. I'm sorry, I couldn't resist that. Presbyterian Publishing, which I believe is Westminster John Knox, that's going to be a fairly substantial book, 376 pages. You'll want to be on the lookout for that book. Wanted to see if there was anything else that. Oh yes, There is the Living Water Studies in John 4 by Martin Lloyd-Jones. So these are based on his sermons at the Westminster Chapel in London. Another book that's in that same series of studies in Christian history and thought is William Evans' Imputation and Impartation, Union with Christ in American Reformed Theology.
Yes, I did see that one just a little while ago.
Just when you thought you had read all the books on union with Christ.
No, of course not. There are many more.
Another one. Yes, there's another one coming down the pike. Now, that, I believe, is related to his dissertation that he did at Westminster, or that he did a THM at Westminster on this topic, I believe. So this will be worth looking at. And it looks like it's going to deal with, I see pictures on the cover of Edwards, Calvin, Hodge, and I can't quite make out the fourth person. But anyway, you'll want to be on the lookout for that coming out in February.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's see here. Books that are, those are forthcoming, books that are actually out that we want to mention. Oh, my goodness. Oh, did we already mention, Camden, that Bible Works 8 is out now?
No, but I've been putting a picture of that on the website, and we've mentioned it on Feeding on Christ.
Right.
But there's some interesting new features. Lane Keister had mentioned some things, but they've got a cross-reference window now. There's several other things that are incorporated into it. Several grammars. I think Walt K. O'Connor might be in there. Is that?
Yes, Walt K. O'Connor, Maralka, Juon, and Maralka. So it's loaded, and they've added, I believe, the early church fathers.
You can do a whole search on that.
So that's all integrated in with the material. So that is like the premier Bible software program in terms of not only original languages but also multiple foreign languages.
Right. I got to explain, you can buy the entire BibleWorks software. I think it's about $350. It's a little hefty, but it's worth every cent to me. If you already have a copy, you can get an upgrade from BibleWorks 7 for $149.99. And then the price goes up a little bit depending on how old your version is. BibleWorks 6 upgrade is $175, etc. So if you already have a copy and would like these features, don't think that you have to buy a whole new license. You can get an upgrade. And it really is worth it. Kind of helps to keep you motivated in terms of your original language study. It really helps in sermon prep. And now with the cross-reference window can help to find some connections that were a little bit slow when you're trying to work with a paper Bible and the Bible Works. Now, of course, we want to remind people, don't use it to cheat.
Don't use it
to cheat yourself on your languages. However, if you use it properly as a tool, the value is just immense.
Right. This is one of those software packages that I think a person in this life will never outgrow in terms of its capabilities.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's fair to say. And so you want to keep that in mind as something to consider. Also, there's the book called Christian Apologetics in a World Community by William Durness. Something to be on the lookout for. And let's see, what is there anything else that I wanted to mention? That just may be it.
Ooh.
I think we've beaten up the. There must be something that I've left out, but right now it's escaping me.
Well, this might be our shortest episode of anything ever. But that's totally fine. If there's no news, we don't need to draw it out. We can point everybody back to the website. You can get the list of books and everything you need at reformedforum.org/RMR for this program. Why don't you also visit the website and listen to Christ the Center if you don't already. We've got several interviews that have just been released. We put something out every Friday morning, and we have several really, really fun guests coming on here in the future. Stay tuned to Christ the Center. As we part, we always like to say,
Tola Lege.
Pick up and read.